Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Good day to you. Welcome to the Session Podcast. I guess it's a podcast now. Welcome to the Brewing Network's first ever podcast. Used to just be a live streaming show. But now, Kara Taylor is here. She remembers when it was just a live streaming show. But now she's one of the cool kids who's all into podcasts. So I'll make this a podcast. Welcome to the Brewing Network's first ever podcast. I'm your host, Justin Crawley. I'm here with my good friends from White Labs Brewing Company. They're here. They're actually White Labs Yeast Company and Brewing Company. And I don't think they've been on the show since they're White Labs Brewing Company. At least not that we've had their beer and talked about it. So we're going to do that. We're going to talk about all things new yeast. And welcome to Chris White and Kara Taylor. Welcome, guys.
Hi.
You're here.
Hello.
You made it into the studio.
We made it.
You followed my new rule. No more of this Zoom shit. I make everybody come to the studio right now.
And
you
guys I love that rule.
You guys did that. I appreciate it. You flew in from, not even from San Diego. You're from North Carolina today?
No, I was in Chicago.
Oh, Chicago. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, visiting the family.
I was, but I was also at a fermentation conference.
Okay.
Oh, nice. It was really cool. Yeah. Okay. All things fermented.
Oh, right. So just like sourdough bread and like you name it.
Coffee, kefir, kombucha.
Okay.
Sander Katz was the keynote.
Right.
It was an impressive lineup. Yeah.
We had him on the show years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when he came out with that like Bible of Fermentation book. I was like a really big fan of the book. I just thought it was a really cool thing, and he had such a great story and was nice enough to come and do an interview with to be on the phone. He did a phone interview with us.
Oh yeah. He has like 5 books now. Yeah.
Crazy.
I know. It was cool. Yeah.
Is he still living on a compound? Did you talk to him?
He had clothing that indicated maybe he was still living on a compound.
Yeah. No, he was like, I'm telling you, if you go back to the interview, it's pretty fascinating because he was living on this compound and doing like medical research about fermentation too on this compound, which is kind of, I thought, interesting. But he's like the guy for every, if it's all like... Like, all right, in my opinion, Chris White, welcome, Chris White.
Thank you.
Chris White's the fermentation guy to me, right? But there's something about Sander Katz that he's like the wild everything else fermentation guy. He's a guru of sorts.
Yes, for sure. Yes. Yeah. There was a guy from Japan talking about soy sauce. It was also there's a soy sauce manufacturing plant in Richmond, Virginia, I've learned.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, no idea. Ugh. They have manufacturing tours. I got to go.
And yeah, why not? Well, and didn't I ask you once, Whitey, I was listening to like a NPR or something. And at the time, they were either talking about an insulin shortage or just the cost of it. And I think I learned during that interview that insulin either can be or is fermented. Is that real?
I guess it depends the way you use the word.
Okay.
Like when we talk about growing yeast or making beer or doing even a wild beer, we talk about fermentation. In the world of
like medical
kind of production of things, fermentation means, as it originally meant, no oxygen. Right. So insulin, human insulin, is made in Puerto Rico and in Europe in yeast or bacteria. One company makes it in yeast. One company makes it in bacteria.
I see.
They use a lot of oxygen. So we colloquially say fermentation, right? You can call it fermentation, but technically they wouldn't call it fermentation because they pump a lot of oxygen to make a lot more yeast or bacteria so they can make more of the insulin they're trying to make with inside the cell.
I see. That, believe it or not, that makes sense to me. So it's not like a traditional fermentation like I would think of, where you're reproducing yeast cells. You're reproducing something inside of those cells.
And you're making the cells in order to make the things they're making inside the cells.
Okay.
It's what Genentech started doing originally as one of the first biotech companies in the world near here in South San Francisco. They're the first ones to make human insulin, and they licensed it to Eli Lilly, and that's why it's made in Puerto Rico. And you could go down every drug, down different stories. This is just one story I know.
Yeah.
And it was kind of the origins of biotechnology on the pharmaceutical side, right? And so we sort of live in the food and beverage side, in the beer and yeast world. But there, if you just looked at the fermenters, if you looked at the reactors, you know, you wouldn't see a lot of difference. You're like, they're making something like brewers do.
Yeah.
But the sanitation, you know, the need for sterility is higher as a human injectable, which is where we kind of have to get to in yeast, even though obviously it's for beer,
yeah.
But we go more towards that direction in yeast production, and you wouldn't see the oxygen going inside the reactor, inside the fermenter. But in brewing, like, we don't add anything. You know, you pitch the yeast and you don't add anything else usually because you're afraid of oxygen pickup. You're afraid of contamination.
Mm-hmm.
But in a pharmaceutical company, they're adding buffers. They're adding nutrients. They're adding carbohydrates. They're adding oxygen. So every fermenter is fed with a lot of stuff.
Okay. Because flavor doesn't matter.
No, they're trying to make a drug. They're trying to make more cells to make whatever they put inside the DNA to be able to be made by that cell.
I see.
And the first one was human insulin, which had a big impact on, you know, diabetics, especially type 1.
Yeah.
Which I'm one of, so that's why I know the story.
Right.
I guess.
And I think that's why I brought it up to you to begin with. I was like, whoa, even insulin is fermented. All right, we're diving right in already. I love, we're already learning things. I'm here with White Labs, as I said, and I also got to do a couple quick business things. I want to thank our sponsor, More Beer, always our sponsor of this program. You all know that. They have been since before we ever did our first show. Chris Graham says hello to you, too.
We love him.
He's sorry he couldn't make it today. But go to morebeer.com and check it out. You can buy White Labs yeast there. You can buy the Comost line of kegerators. I just used my new Comos plate chiller jockey box over the weekend at a friend's baby shower, because, you know, everybody does like co-ed baby showers now, so I went to that and I brought beer. Have you seen this thing? So you know how the average jockey box has coils, like the whole cooler is full of coils, right? Which is great for high volume settings. You kind of need that. You need those coils immersed in ice and ice water so that the beer constantly at a beer festival is cold. Okay, but if you're just going to your backyard or picnic or whatever, so I have the Comos Jockey Box is a roto molded cooler. So it's like a Yeti. But instead of being completely full with coils, there's just a plate chiller at the bottom. So the beer came through that perfectly cold for the volume of beer I was pouring at this party, this picnic. And I got to stash a bunch of bottles and cans in the ice that was sitting in the cooler on top of the plate chiller. So your Jockey Box is now a usable cooler as you're pouring beer through the plate chiller that sits flat at the bottom of it. And I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. So go to morebeer.com, check it out. And I recommend every backyard Jockey Box person. You know, if you're the one who brings beer in a Jockey Box or you have a lot of parties, I think you should get the plate chiller one.
Does it weigh less?
No. It does not.
I feel like that's always the thing where it's like there's four. We have one at work has four coils, and I'm like, I can't even lift this thing.
You know,
empty.
If it weighs less, it's not by much. Because no, it's still a heavy little thing. I just loved, though. By the way, it poured perfectly in terms of foam and all that. Because it, boy, did it just come through cold. But I just liked that it's also then a usable cooler on top of.
Yeah, that's cool.
Anyway, I loved it.
That's kind of nice. You know, those guys at More Beer are very smart.
Yep.
And good people. They're so it's cool that they're also innovating something like that, you know?
Yeah. And their kegerator, like regular kegerator, is in my RV.
Oh.
I have a Comos full-on three-tap kegerator.
Did I know you see his eyes?
I know you like, I know you're, you and I RV together.
Yes.
Whitey, you got to take a look at this. You know, I've got the giant Class A like you used to have.
And I had to downsize. I'm sorry.
There was like a little recliner type of chair there that I never used. I just put my dirty laundry on it, you know, just as you do. Took it out, put in a Comos kegerator. Three taps. Right now I have three beers on. I have a cider.
Actually remove the chair or you just set it on top of the chair?
Yeah, I just removed the chair.
Okay.
Took it right out. Yeah.
You
it was like
use
barely
that.
Clamped down. You know? Okay. I don't know. These RVs aren't made like they used to be. You just pull things out like nothing. And now it fits. This kegerator fits perfectly right there. You'll have to check it out. You need to look at these things.
So you pulled out your tool belt.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not even that. This just had like a hand dial clamp holding the chair on. It was one of these like, it's kind of a removable chair. What I didn't do yet is properly like latch down the kegerator, but it's been fine so far.
I mean, do you even drive that RV? Doesn't it just sit in one spot?
No, I drive it too. And one of these days, I'm gonna have to totally slam on the brakes, and bad shit's gonna happen. But it hasn't happened yet. I've had to hit the brakes pretty hard, and I do like a little bungee cord setup.
Yeah, that'll totally. I think, yep, totally.
But it's so heavy. Where's it gonna go? I'm that way.
The back of your head.
Kind of half-assed. Yeah. Oh, it's on the passenger side. It's fine. The back of somebody else's head. I don't give a shit. Anyway, you go to morebeer.com and check it out. The Comos kegerators are great. And like the thing about that one, too, you know, like at my house, I have one of those old True kegerators. You know, the brand True. It's like a commercial kegerator. I mean, things are workhorse. But it's really loud. You know, like the compressors go on and stuff. Mm-hmm. But the Comos kegerators are more like a dorm fridge, so they don't have like a giant loud compressor. Because, you know, you can hear everything sitting in the living room of your RV. Like, you just can't. You hear every little thing that happens. So it's just a little tiny sound, a little, like that's all it does every now and then. Like a little tiny, little bubble.
That's some ASMR stuff right there.
See, it's a new audience I'm going to get right now. Branching out. I think you should take a look at these things, Whitey.
Yeah, we were near each other at the HomebrewCon in Minneapolis this year, and I was really impressed with the stuff they had. Like, wow, they came up with a whole bunch of new stuff, including those kegerators and fermenters with glycol. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Glycol at home. It seems ridiculous, but they're innovating.
Yeah.
All right, go to morebeer.com. Check them out. Tell them we said thanks to you for supporting this show. You can support us by hitting the donate button on our homepage. It takes you over to PayPal. You can donate once. You can sign up for a recurring monthly donation. I know so many of you have done it over the years, and it's why we're still here. I promise you, it's why you're still listening to this program. So thank you for doing that. Also, if you don't want to spend any extra money, you could do your Amazon shopping. Just click the Amazon link on our homepage, and then just do your normal shopping. Like, you won't even know that you're sending us cash that way. It's a great way to do it. And of course, support all of our sponsors. There's a whole sponsors page. You can go click on that and just let them know that you love them for supporting the Brewing Network. If you want to send your feedback to the Brewing Network, just send it to feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com. And we try to answer every email or read it on the air. And you can say anything you want. We don't care. Good, bad,
whatever. Just happy to hear from you. All right. Well, before we dive into all things yeast, why don't we talk about this beer in our glass, which was brewed at White Labs Brewing Company in San Diego, California, right in the same facility that you make yeast, right?
Correct.
Got the brew house right there. And that's kind of, so of course you've got the tap room there where you can go taste White Labs yeast brewed beer of all sorts of varieties. We've talked about this on the show before where you might take one style of beer but split batch it between, I don't know, four different yeasts or something.
Yeah.
And you can go there and you can taste through that and really get to know the different flavors that yeast makes in, say, the exact same wort, right?
Yeah.
And then you've expanded a little bit. You can get crowlers. You can do different things. And so what do we have here that's from White Labs Brewery?
Yeah. So, okay, we've got... We have the, it's a light American lager.
Mm-hmm.
So I know this is your favorite style.
I do like a light lager every now and then.
But this beer was originally designed when I did a talk at CBC like 2 years ago talking about low calorie, low carbohydrate beers. And because I think that, you know, there's a huge seltzer market right now, and I think the beer industry is sort of fighting that a little bit in terms of it's not craft enough. Mm. But we see people want that, right?
Sure.
So I wanted to show people how to make a beer that is low calorie, low carbohydrate, and it can still taste good. And you can make this in a craft style, because even a lot of light lagers that craft breweries are making aren't really that light if you actually look at the analytics of them.
Okay.
So in order to create this, obviously it's a very, you know, low malt profile. We don't have any adjuncts such as corn or, you know, dextrose in it or, any, you know, table sugar. But we did add an enzyme in it. And so that enzyme allows to break down those larger dextrins. And so we get a drier beer, essentially. Okay. And so this particular beer is about 6 carbs per 12 ounces. Sorry, I was trying to think it's per 12 ounces. And so for reference, Michelob Ultra is 2.7 grams carbs.
That's one of their big claims.
Yes. Yeah, that's definitely like one of the lowest on the market that I can think of.
Okay.
So, and it's about 113 calories per glass, which again, we're not constantly talking about calories all the time. We're thinking about this, but you know, I think it's an important style because more consumers want something lighter. And you know, I like to drink like 8 beers, so
yeah,
you can drink 8 of these instead of just like one,
right?
You know, maple voodoo stout or whatever those things are called.
Yeah, just you name whatever it is. Yeah, yeah. Maple voodoo cupcake stout.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
This
beer is delicious. Like too,
but. Yeah. And this is made with the American lager yeast.
Okay.
So this one is the other one. Sorry. This is probably not the best place to...
Yeah, don't pour the beer on them.
It's also the Mexican lager yeast. This one they added lime to, like all great craft beers.
Yeah, there it is. I can smell it.
Lime in there a little bit. Again, another favorite strain of mine is the Mexican lager. I think it's so good. Mm-hmm. Very underrated. Also, don't have to make Mexican style lagers with a strain. I think it's just delicious as is also. But
these are both delicious.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously they're a couple days old in a crowler, but like overall, I think they're super, super delicious.
Are these filtered?
No, probably Biofine, clarifying agent.
Yeah, we don't have a filter.
Are both of those yeast just highly flocculating too? Or that's just a good, great amount of Biofine? Great Biofine techniques.
Well, we give them time too. So the Mexican lager yeast is WLP 940. The American lager yeast is WLP 840.
Okay, yeah.
And we, you know, we give them a good, you know, 4 weeks of conditioning time.
Okay.
So, yeah, they're really clear. The light lager, is something not a lot of craft breweries have done. More and more are doing it. I mean, Lagunitas and Sudwerk in this area around you, Justin, have beers on the market for about 3 grams of carbs in a 12-ounce. So it's doable.
Yeah.
You know, the enzyme process goes back to Miller Lite. That was the original German method that Miller Lite employed to make Miller Lite. And they called it diabetic beer, you know. So it was for diabetics at the time. Yeah. Because nobody knew carbohydrates really except for diabetics. I mean, it's something that a lot of people recognize now, but I spent my life talking about. Most people thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
You know, because... especially if you're a kid with diabetes, you understand carbohydrates. It's something that controls that you have to work with blood sugar. But everybody in my whole life talked about calories. And there's a lot of people out there probably shaking their head listening to this now that they've kind of understood what calories mean versus carbohydrates. And carbohydrates, the idea that they're all just sugar.
Yeah.
It's all just sugar. So the idea that there's carbohydrates that are okay, of course there's some that are slower, they just become sugar. Your body makes sugar out of anything that's just a sugar chain, right? Unless it's fiber and a couple other things. Anyway, same thing with beer. You know, that residual, and we drink all those other beers too. We're just starting with this beer, so we might as well talk about it. All those, the carbohydrates that have what's left over in a grain fermentation become sugar in your body. So the idea that beer doesn't have sugar is a little silly. It's not really understood. It's become sugar as soon as you drink it, because we have enzymes in our mouth and our body and the microbes in our body that turn those carbohydrates into sugar within about 20 minutes.
Wow.
So anyway, when you treat it with an enzyme, which is what Miller did to make Miller Lite, goes back to the 1970s, and now some craft breweries are doing it. It's a really light-tasting beer, so it's not going to be for everybody. It's just something... that has a yeast and enzyme interaction. Anheuser-Busch decided not to do that when they came out with Bud Light. So they do a 3-hour plus, I think, mash, because they just want to make it more fermentable without using the patent.
I see.
So
let me stop.
You don't have to do the enzyme process to make an American Light Lager.
Okay, because that was going to be my question. It sounds to me like, okay, so this low carb, this six, I think you said 6 grams, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is not exactly yeast derivative. It's just your regular American lager yeast that does attenuate down quite well, but then it's this enzyme that reduces the carbs. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, so it's the yeast don't have the amylase enzymes, right? Or glucoamylase in this case. And humans do. We have them in our mouth, right? And the microbes we have inside of us, but yeast don't. So yeast only can ferment the simple sugars you give them from the mash. Mm-hmm. So we mash our grain. I think a lot of people doing all grain would say, okay, it's done in an hour. It's done in a half an hour. No, it's actually not. That's why if you do an overnight mash, it's going to ferment drier. If you do a 3-hour mash, it's going to ferment drier.
Okay.
We kind of settled as an industry as one hour.
Yeah.
You know, and that gives the right terminal gravity. But the enzymes aren't done.
Okay.
Okay. There's still more work the enzymes could do. So you do a longer mash, you can do the same thing as the enzyme, similar thing, but you can't break some of the chains that the glucoamylase can do. And you can, but the part that the yeast do is they're going to ferment the sugars, the simple sugars, up to maltotriose that you give them.
Okay.
That's why in a wine, since it's from a grape that's simple sugar, they're going to ferment it to zero.
Okay.
In beer, it doesn't ferment to zero, not because of the yeast, but because of what they're eating. Because there's these carbohydrates. In the yeast world, that really means something. They can't ferment those. In the human world, we can digest all that.
Okay.
That's why I think carbohydrate's a weird word versus just calling it sugar.
Yeah.
But the rest of the biology does have a reason to call it that. So you give them the right amount of carbohydrates, they'll ferment lower. The Miller Lite process, what that meant was if they ferment lower, it's going to make higher alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So then they would have to dilute it more with the water they already used in the process of canning and bottling
okay.
and kegging. So craft breweries are doing it in a little bit different way, not really adding water, usually just sort of starting with a lower gravity starting material.
Okay.
That's all.
And then in this particular case of the White Labs beer, adding this enzyme.
Correct, yeah. So it's an amyloglucosidase.
Okay.
Super easy word to pronounce.
Yeah.
And it's our product Ultra Firm. And so, you know, we have it in homebrew and professional sizes, but yeah, it's relatively inexpensive.
Yeah.
So, you know, pretty easy to use, and we add it into the mash. You can also add it into the fermenter, but it will go to terminal, like, you know, it will just keep chewing it up because you need to either boil it, you need to boil it in order to deactivate it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Which is why it's better in the mash, because it does its work there.
Correct.
And then you boil. Leaves fermentables for the yeast to just do the rest of the work.
Yes, correct.
So what if I did it in a, I mean, what if I made my normal 6.5% alcohol pale ale and I put these enzymes in that mash? Is it also going to reduce the carbohydrates in that beer?
Yeah. So think this is actually the same process that when brut IPAs were really popular.
This is
the exact same thing, right? So people were using this enzyme exactly for this. Unfortunately, brut IPAs had a terrible name because the consumer had no idea what a brut IPA was.
Sounds like it's going to beat you over the head.
Yeah. But I was so excited by this, and because it was a low carb IPA and I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, no one came up with a cooler name. So now there's a lot of low calorie IPAs, and it's essentially that same brut IPA recipe using the enzyme. And so both of these are, the final gravity is 0.998 or negative 0.5 Plato, depending on what units you'd like to use.
Okay.
So
yeah,
very low.
Mm-hmm. So I kind of have the same question for this that I think I had about, what's the gluten one? Clarity Firm?
Yes, Clarity Firm, yes.
Oh, see, I remember after all these years. Where I was like, okay, so Clarity Firm, this enzyme you can add that, and you guys aren't allowed to say that it makes your beer gluten-free, but you say it makes it gluten-reduced. And we've taught, I can say the word, so you can correct me or not correct me, that it essentially can make your beer at such a low gluten level that it's mostly undetectable, right? Well, so my question back then was like, well, why wouldn't every brewer just put this in their beer? Because I kept asking you, like, well, what else does it change? I mean, does the flavor then suffer? And you guys are like, no, nothing's really going to suffer. And you weren't, you kind of were like, yeah, we think every brewer should use it. They just don't want to or something, or make this gluten-reduced product. So
yeah,
I guess I kind of have the same question about this is, does the flavor suffer in this hypothetical pale ale I just asked you about?
So think about when you had a brewed IPA and think about the body, right? Because this is essentially what you're doing is breaking down that body.
Okay.
So we're not drinking American Light Lagers for a big body in it, right?
So it's the perfect style.
Exactly.
For that. Yeah.
We know what we're getting with that, but you can do it. Essentially, you could do it with any beer style, but you're going to have a much lighter body, which is what.
Okay.
A lot of people, when they were drinking brewed IPAs, were like, it's not the same. I'm like, of course it's
true.
Not, right?
Yeah.
But like, you can't have diet beer, essentially, and expect it to be exact, you know?
And you'd, so in my hypothetical, if I just took my pale ale and added this, well, then I'd have this weird, overly bitter, kind of thin, like it would just, by removing body, it does affect the rest of the recipe.
Yeah, so if you think about it too, like Brettanomyces does the same thing, right? So Brettanomyces will, what we consider to be over attenuate, really, really dry. And so the way that we counteract that is by usually doing a really high carb on some of those beers.
Okay.
Right? And so that is like replacing some of the body. But if you just tasted a Brett beer, very, you know, no carbonation,
flat,
it gets kind of like, it's a little watery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the body that we kind of now expect from beer, based on that hour mash or less, is what we expect, right? So if you break those carbohydrates down and it tastes different. So Ultra Firm or any kind of glucoamylase, and it goes by some different nomenclature names, like Kara said, but it'll be drier.
Hmm.
It'll be thinner.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's not what a lot of people expect. So we don't spend a lot of time drinking this beer either, even though we started this conversation with this beer
because
it came from our brewery and we're kind of talking about it. But my favorite is still IPAs, right?
Yeah.
But if you used ultra firm or a glucoamylase on your pale ale that you want at 6.5%, it'd probably be 7% or more. I'm not doing the math right here because it's going to go drier.
Yeah, okay.
It's going to make more alcohol, which is actually going to give you some more calories from the alcohol. That's why if you water down a little bit to remove the lower the alcohol, you have less because you have less calories because you have less carbohydrates.
Sure.
You know, so it gets a little complicated from a brewer, commercial brewery's labeling perspective, but all the that testing is all there. I mean, not as a plug for White Labs, but we do all that testing. We do nutrient labels. You know, that's what Cara helps manage. And so since some of these beers are coming out with people wanting to do these kind of things, people are sending us more samples for nutritional labels, even if it's not going on the beer, because traditionally beer hasn't had a nutritional label, because the federal government in the United States basically doesn't want people to think beer has nutrition.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Although now that's changing, now it's going to totally reverse, and within a few years, you're going to have a label available for a beer, whether it's on the beer or not, or available for commercial markets.
Also, when I was at Eureka today, they had all of the calories for every food item on the menu today.
Yeah.
No one wants to eat somewhere where you have to look at the calories before you order something.
Yeah.
Not a burger place.
But there's laws now, and they might have finally reached the size.
Yes, yeah.
Because it's a certain amount of locations like or something. 20. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So they might have.
I was like, that is very awful.
Yeah.
Well, it's just overreach, right? I mean, it's just one of those things where, hey, let's make all these manufacturers, even small ones, figure out what the calories are so they can put it on a menu. And you know what? No one's going to care.
No
one's going to read it. So it sounds good sitting around a table, maybe of politicians, but I'm sorry. These things are worthless.
Yeah.
Nobody's looking at. Did you make your food decision,
I
Cara,
totally did, but this is like, I'm a girl. Yeah.
I'm totally wrong.
I 100% was looking at it, and I was like, God, I guess I'll just eat half of that.
I feel like if you're already going to make those decisions, it's because you're already pretty aware and you're making yourself aware of what calorie contents are in certain foods, right? So maybe today you were somewhat surprised because it's Eureka, but you're already counting calories.
Yes. Yeah. I'm already
thinking.
Yeah. So, if you're not thinking about it, yes, of course.
Then you wouldn't care. So the average, if you're not already counting calories, I guess it might. I will say I've been turned, and I don't count calories, but I've been turned off a time or two, especially when it's in comparison on the menu and you're choosing between two things and you're like, oh yeah, there's like a 1500 calorie difference. That's a big old deal. But I still think it's overreaching, by the way.
I mean,
I don't think it should be mandatory.
Milkshake sales gone down since
Starbucks actually, that's why sometimes when you go to a Starbucks, they don't have a full menu, and it's because of that. They don't want to put all the calories next to the Frappuccinos.
Oh, right.
And so they just sort of expect that the items that they have.
Yeah.
It's kind of genius, but yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to take a little break and move on from this topic. But before we move on from this topic, I did want to mention, because you talked about having to water down beer if you were really not using enzymes and things like that to get to the calorie content you want. And years ago, before any craft brewers were talking about this, Dan Gordon from Gordon Biersch would come on this show. And back then, I don't know if you remember, but they used to make GB Light, Gordon Biersch Light. And he... I'm pretty sure he wasn't too happy about it. It was an investor thing that he was asked to do. And I remember asking him, like, how the hell do you make light beer? I was really curious back then. And his very simple answer was, add water. They weren't doing anything enzymatic.
I'm finding more craft people doing the same thing. They're taking their Pilsner and adding water.
And his thing at the time, and I do think he was exaggerating, although it did make a lot of sense to me at the time. He said, you know, if you're really worried about, you know, carbs and calories, because what he was saying was all the calories are in the alcohol anyway. So you're still, whatever the alcohol content is matters, but everyone's talking about carbs and not thinking about those calories. He said, ultimately, what are you really doing when you're drinking beer? Usually snacking on some bullshit. So his thing was like, eat one less bag of chips while you're drinking your beer and you're probably fine. I do think now that has changed. I do think now, even with beer, consumers are counting every calorie. And we're seeing it in this little moment we are in craft beer, right, where we're seeing a little reduction, and like you said, hard seltzers, craft cocktails, ready to drink everything, RTD shit. So Dan Gord, this was 10 years ago when Dan was saying this stuff to me. Now I think the environment is different, and in some ways calories matter. Not to all of us. I'm still going to drink an IPA.
Well, you know, me too, but I'm used to all my life, people making fun of carbohydrates, but there's a much more knowledge about it now.
Yeah.
But it's still surprising how people, through lots of reasons, we're not going to spend the whole show talking about this, but don't have that language. And anyway, so I'm sort of used to that, but beer does have carbohydrates. Those carbohydrates turn into sugar.
Yeah.
I just think that knowledge is okay. Like, I don't spend my time drinking these light lagers. I drink IPAs too.
Mm-hmm.
I know what they have in them, and I could be thinner or whatever.
Yeah.
And better blood sugar management from what I have to do with if I had a light lager. But I like the flavor of IPAs.
But you
and there may be some bridge in the future, you know.
And but in the meantime, just and I'm just talking about you personally. I've spent so much time with you. You are strategic about it. If you and I are out for several hours, went to a baseball game today, you know, we might throw an IPA in there. But you know, if we're going to have more than a couple beers, they can't all be IPAs.
Right.
So even though that is your go-to, you're still strategic about that for your own health.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah, and they are hard to make, too. Like, so we started White Labs Brewing Company 10 years ago. You know, White Labs was 27 years ago, but we wanted to do the brewery 10 years ago, and we only started making these light lagers and within the last year.
Mm-hmm.
We dumped a lot of them beforehand when trying to make them because they are very hard to make.
Yeah.
To hit that low final gravity, to have something that tastes right and not too thin or too weird.
Mm.
And so we're happy to show these today, and more people are making them, which just gives another option. Craft breweries have to keep expanding what they do. I mean, seltzers is an example, but let's get back to beer a little bit. I think that's better for breweries, and this is maybe one thing for the future. And there's also lots of other things people haven't thought of yet. But we do have, and we're going to try some more beers after the break, right? We do have this information on White Labs Brewing Co. website.
Okay.
So you can get there from White Labs. You can get there from White Labs Brewing Co. But anyway, we put all the analytical data on the site. We compare different yeast strains. We can same beers. We always make the same beer with two different yeast strains.
Okay.
So that's what we're trying here.
So go right now to whitelabs.com. You can look up the two beers that we have. Is it just called the American Lager, American Light Lager, and the Mexican Lager?
Yeah, they should be on there, yeah, because they're on tap right now.
And that's the name, though? There's no, like, fancy name. It's just American Light Lager and Mexican Lager?
Correct,
you guys don't have, like,
no, it's American Light Lager, and then it has the two different yeast strains.
Yeah.
And...
oh, I see it on the website right now. So yeah, you can go right there and then you can get the analytics of the exact beers that we're talking about over at whitelabs.com. All right, we're going to take a really quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about more, including all new stuff from White Labs. And if you're looking to learn about better fermentation and yeast in your beer, you're listening to The Right Show. Hang in there. It's The Session. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to The Session. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. We are enjoying your company. We hope you're enjoying ours. And we're still tasting through some White Labs beer. We've got more. They sent us up a few things. A few of their cool-looking new crowlers, which I like very much. And Kara was kind enough to overnight us some beer. So we got some fresh stuff going on in our glass. And this time around, we're going to taste through some IPAs. Mike White, Chris's brother, just joined us in the studio wearing his Giants gear. I'm proud of you. Even though he's an A's fan, he's still representing. Chris and I went to the Giants game today, which was great, other than the Giants losing. But everything else about it was fine. Chris and Mike and Kara, too, this year have been on a baseball park tour of sorts. Every time we go to an event together, like the Homebrew Conference and the Craft Brewers Conference, we try to make a baseball stadium stop along the way. I think at least me and the White Brothers are nerdy enough that we want to tick off all the ballparks at some point in our lifetime. Kara, while I think you enjoy the baseball parks with us, mostly put up with us.
Yeah, I'm there for the alcohol and the food. Yeah.
But they're fun to go to. I just know you, Kara, like, you put up with me a lot. And you're like, no, I'll totally go. I like the food, I like the beer, even a little baseball. But I'm like a nerd. Like, I got to go see this part of the stadium and that part, yes, of the stadium. And you're like, okay, Justin.
Yeah. You also, you're like, not a lot of talking while we're watching.
No, I want to watch. Yeah.
Yeah. You have favorite pitchers and stuff.
I want to go, or like, I want to be there an hour early to walk the whole park. Like, to me, it's my new hobby. I could start the Baseball Park Network, where I'm not even knowledgeable enough about baseball to talk sports. I could just talk about stadiums. I could just do that.
Did I tell you that I sat next to a guy, and he had to be in his 80s and on a plane recently, and he was doing a baseball park tour with his buddies.
Nice.
And he called it summer camp for old men, and I loved it. Yeah. And it was so cute. I could see you and Chris doing that in, what, 10 years?
We're close to that. Yeah. Well, but the one comment I was going to make is good for him, because if I'm honest, and I don't mean to be morbid, but my buddies, when I'm 80, are what? I've got like two left? Like,
you guys are going to be in Rascals instead? You're just going to be in
those. But if you're doing stuff with your buddies at 80, good for you.
Yeah.
That many are still around, that it's plural.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying. You know.
Yeah, and baseball parks are so interesting, right? Because they're so unique, right? Whether they're professional or minor league, they're all different. They have different dimensions. They have different aspects to them, different foods. They tend to bring in some of the local food. So to me, it works as well with craft beer and local food as other things with your friends. And it's just another thing to see in cities.
Exactly. It's local flair.
Yeah, and international, too. I mean, it's not just the United States. Of course, it's South America and Puerto Rico, things like that, but it's also Japan and Taiwan. It's really interesting.
The Padres and the Giants, see, you'll like this, Kara.
Korea.
It just got announced yesterday that for the first time ever, the Padres and the Giants are going to play a major league game in Mexico City next season.
Oh, we should go. That's my favorite city.
I know. You love it.
That's my favorite city in the world.
And
so far.
The MLB's been doing games in the UK, and they try these different, so they're trying all sorts of new things. And anyway, baseball's actually big in Latin America, and they're gonna go to Mexico City next season. So
great.
We can make a trip out of that one.
Let's do it.
Right? All right, let's now talk about White Labs and some pure pitch stuff. Because since I've spoken to you, there's now the next generation of your latest technology, right?
Yes. I mean, the main thing that started us 27 years ago was yeast strains, right? So we do the brewery, we do analytical testing, we do these other things, but what we mostly do and what 80% of the workforce at White Labs works on and we talk about every single day is yeast. And yeast strains, we built up almost 80 different yeast strains that we make every single week, starting with California Yellow Yeast, WP001, our first strain.
Yeah. Still the most popular, I assume.
Still the most popular. Yeah. It has, just such amazing properties to make clean beers, but also awesome IPAs, which is really what got it, us even making more of it, was when IPAs got popular in the 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't a thing in the 90s. It was, but California used to work good for the other beers like pale ales and blonde ales and things like that. And now your tremendous number of offshoots of other styles and juicy and everything else we could talk about. So we're doing, that's why it's not just California Ale Yeast Company. We have, 80 strains that Kara and other people have to figure out how to manage to make those every single week.
Yeah, wow.
Can you imagine a brewery trying to make 80 different beers
every week, yeah,
in three different facilities. It's something we do because we care about these yeast strains, and we do it in very small batches, really micro batches. We're not some big batch company. We make very small batches every single day.
Is it measured in barrels? Like, can brewers relate if we say how many barrels these small batches are, or do you not measure it that way?
Yeah, yeah. They're 400 liters.
Yeah, 400 liters, four barrelish.
Got it.
Size is we used to have anywhere from something very smaller to 20 barrel.
Okay.
And we standardized on 400, so four barrels,
yeah,
which is very small size.
You know,
but
sure,
a whole sea of them.
Right.
So in the facility, so we make, that's how it allows us to make all these different strains, and in fresh form, you know, every day making all these little micro batches. So I think some people think we make these huge batches, and we make a lot of wort, but we distribute it among a lot of different yeast strains. And that's one reason why we did the brewery too, because when we needed more wort production and we said, let's go with all grain, let's do a big brew house, let's do a four vessel brew house, you know, why not also put some fermenters in and make some beers? Yeah. So while that brew house in San Diego and Asheville, we don't have the same one in Copenhagen because they don't have a brewery there, but later they will. But anyway, when we all week make wort after wort after wort for the east side, you know, a couple times a week, we'll make a batch of beer wort and put it in the fermenters, the double stacked fermenters we have, to and then we'll take 10 barrels into 2 5-barrel fermenters, or 20 barrels into 4 5-barrel fermenters. Hmm. And so we split every batch down to make these different yeast strains. But we're trying to do a brewery that's non-competitive too. We're not trying to pick a whole bunch of tap handles, do this stuff. We're trying to do educational, sure, little brewery, sell the beers in our own tap rooms. And
you, when you say non-competitive, you mean your customers are brewers.
Exactly. We're not trying
home brewers
to take,
and pro brewers. And so, you're not looking for market share to sell beer.
Exactly.
In fact, I don't know if you don't have to talk about it, but my guess would be the beer center is not a profitable place of the White Labs facility. It's a showcase place. It wasn't even designed to, not just to not compete, but you weren't like, hey, we're going to sell $1 million of beer out of our tap room. It was really just a showcase.
Right. Our target and where we were in 19 and kind of coming back as things happen is around 1,000 barrels.
Yeah. Okay. A year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really low volume. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's more than some people. That's a lot less than most people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, there's a lot of small breweries too that would be their thing.
Yeah. You know?
So, but for us, it's mostly the yeast.
Okay. So over the years that I've known you, of course, when I found White Labs, you had the vial. Which we have here in the studio, the good old, and boy did people love, let me put it on camera over here, boy did people love like the vial. It just, you know, simple, effective, sat on a shelf, right, you twist off the cap, you dump it, and a lot of companies would have just rested there. They rested on their laurels. You had found a nice package that worked for so many different parts of what you do. But it didn't work for everything that you wanted to do. You wanted a cleaner technology. You wanted to advance the technology. So you came up with the first iteration of, is it, because this was Pure Pitch too, or was the new one just?
No, that, we just called that vials. Okay, we called
it
our yeast.
The new one was Pure Pitch.
And actually, that has a kind of more beer connection, one of your sponsors, because they said, because originally I had a different kind of package in the 90s, and it was kind of not very robust.
Okay.
And more beer said, look, because I wasn't shipping yeast much. I was just sending it to a few stores, and they said, it's not holding up. It's not strong enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I set out a quest to find a stronger package for more beer.
Got it.
And that came to the vial, which was really unique to find at the time.
Do you know what that's used for, Justin?
So I do, which is one of the reasons. I think it's one of the first times I was like, man, that Chris White's a genius, right? it's the original vial, I guess you call it, it was a blank for 2-liter bottles. Right, that they would blow up into 2-liter
soda bottles. Yeah, exactly.
But it started as this tiny little package, which is about 6-7 inches long, very thick plastic. The cap on it is exactly the same as you'd find on a 2-liter bottle, but the manufacturing process would expand this into what we know as a 2-liter soda bottle.
Right.
But you didn't need to expand it. You just needed the preform.
Right. And those weren't really in any commercial products in the 90s. Now you can find it in candies and energy drinks and stuff like that. But in the 90s, for somebody who didn't know anything, like if you didn't see it in retail, you didn't know it existed.
Right.
And so I had to go a long search to kind of figure it out. And we were able to pull some off Ball's line in LA and things like that. But it didn't hold up for the long term. Yes, we could have just stayed with that.
Yeah.
We would have been more profitable over the years without trying to reinvent stuff and all that kind of stuff. But to me, the yeast wasn't the best in it.
Okay.
It developed a little too much pressure. It wasn't the exact size we wanted. We started having problems getting the vial because of the introduction of Chinese manufacturing and Ball not doing as much. And then the huge amount of plastic that might be in it because it's supposed to stretch.
Yeah.
And so for those reasons, I started really looking at some other manufacturing methods. And so we also kind of saw something going on in the pharmaceutical industry with growing these microbes we talked about, yeast and bacteria, for making cells to make drugs. And they had kind of gone to single-use vessels, a lot of them, instead of stainless, because you could verify that they were sterile in a much easier way because they're blown under this high heat. And then you can irradiate them, and it's not a CIP method. So I was intrigued by that, but with the added caveat, if we could grow yeast in film instead of stainless steel, we could seal the yeast in that film. And so that became Pure Pitch.
So let me just dumb that down for me and anybody else who's like me. When you say single-use vessel, so what you used to do with the vial, it's propagated, it's grown, you have this very clean yeast to all of your standards, grown in stainless steel, but then it has to go through a process of being put into a package, which is the original vial.
Right. You know, there's one thing about making the yeast, and that's what we concentrate mostly on. From the lab process, we got a 21-day process. We really care about getting yeast in the super high vitality state so it can withstand a long term out there in the market. Because, you know, say a brewery grows their own yeast, it gets pumped into a fermenter. Say a home brewer grows their yeast, it goes into the fermenter.
Yeah.
For us, we got to ship it around the world. And that was always a big deal for me. Like, how do we keep it in the best condition to ship it around the world? So while we mostly care about the yeast itself and making the strain, you see these different iterations, same yeast in different packages, as we're trying to get it better delivered around the world. So the Pure Pitch idea was, it's not exposed to oxygen, which it's not the same as beer. In terms of flavor, it's about yeast thinking oxygen should do something, and contaminants, of course. Mm-hmm. So instead of collecting it from a stainless steel vessel, as you would do with the vial or any other kind of liquid yeast, you know, and then packaging it into something, we grew it in the film and sealed it there, so it wouldn't have any any opportunity for contaminants or things. Yeah. Like, it was a really
single
novel
vessel,
thing. Yeah. We were able to patent it. The yeast condition is fabulous, but we lost the cap.
Right. So I was around for this innovation, and I was around for all of the, by the way, and we won't go into it because we could do a whole show, and we have talked about it before. We're talking about a tremendous amount of equipment that had to be designed from the ground up, from some other industries and taken cues from other things. But you and I remember Trolls at the time and all you guys at White Labs really having to go nuts to build this package right here, which I remember the excitement in you, Chris, because of what you really believed in behind this single package, no opportunity for contaminants, and just really felt that it was a purer pitch, like a way. Wow. And then you released it to some fanfare, of course, and I think people really understanding the technology, loving it. But of course, there's those of us who are creatures of habit. And that's right. Where I do remember, and I think it was even frustrating for me on your behalf, because I saw the amount of work that went into to this right here, which, by the way, you just snip off the top and you pour it in. So it wasn't really that difficult. But and I'm allowed to say this. You're not criticizing your customers' complaints. I just find those of us, because I'm also a creature of habit. Boy, are we sometimes lazy. And then anyhow, all you have to do is cut it off and pour it in. But people like the things that they sort of fell in love with. Yeah. Okay. So you, again, not resting on your laurels, went back and said, okay, well, what's next for us anyway? Which I think was more than just a twist off. But we could start with the twist off. The next generation Pure Pitch, you brought back the twist off cap. Let me see one of those that I can put on
Want the big one?
The homebrew one. If I can, is that all right?
Yeah, it's you're
not
the first,
even out yet.
You're
is
the
it?
First to show it.
Is that all right?
It's fine.
I never get the scoop. That's awesome.
You got the scoop.
So this is going to reach your homebrew store soon. If you're watching on YouTube, or you can go watch on YouTube. It is Pure Pitch packaging, which we'll talk about because there's innovations to that. But it's got your twist off reusable reclosable cap right there. So you got the here. Where's the? Give me the vial too. We're gonna go. you got the vial was step one. You had Pure Pitch, the first generation, and then you've got next generation Pure Pitch, which you can now. Those of you who didn't care about anything else except that you wanted to twist off a cap, that problem is solved. But there's more to it than that, too, right?
There's so much to it. It's been a 3-year project to make the yeast better, because that's, again, what we care about the most is the yeast itself. So we grow that in a different reactor. Like I say, we grow it in film, but we were able to get the cell count exactly the same. You know, it's cells, but pretty much, you know, to hit a certain number in every collection. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we were able to build a calculator that could tell you exactly how much volume of our yeast you use to get you exact pitching rate you want. So Mike was a leader in that with a team, of course, and he's really good about working with teams.
Have to throw that in there, yeah.
It's tough. We got a lot of people in my labs, a lot of personalities, a lot of really strong, driven people.
Yeah,
I'm not one of them, definitely not.
No, she's very quiet.
Karen never gives her opinion.
So Mike's bless his heart, man. He's had a lot of patience working with these teams from websites to ordering to planning our yeast production to our calculator. And so the calculator is really new because it.
So is that what the QR code is?
Yeah, the QR code takes you to the calculator, takes you to the QC sheet that we've done on all the yeast, takes you to the yeast. In fact, that's a live QC right there, because that's real yeast in there. We're mm-hmm. making them right now. We're just kind of using them ourselves before we go to the stores. The stores don't even know.
Yeah.
So this is a real breaking news.
First breaking news launch. Okay, so I could scan this QR code, yes. Which again, podcasters, if you go to our YouTube page, you'll be able to see it, or look for it on the shelf at your local homebrew shop soon. And then it's going to take me to the batch. And then when you say calculator, so I'm going to punch in the beer that I'm making, and it's going to tell me if I need 1, 2, or 5 of these vials. Like, what do you mean by calculator?
So We've already been out with Pure Pitch Next Generation for over 1 year.
Yeah, for the pro sizes,
uh-huh. Which I've got some here for you, and some of the pros listening probably have used them, because most of our yeast is in that format now.
Okay,
there's just a few more things to figure out with the homebrew and the retailers and everything. So we started with the pro first, and the calculator. There's the calculator live right now for the pros. It's just we haven't released the homebrew one yet because homebrew is not out yet.
I understand. I still want to know what the calculator does specifically.
Yeah, I was just getting there.
Thank you.
I tend to give long answers, but
no. But the show's not 4 hours long anymore.
The calculator is all about customizing. Okay, but it's got something that's never existed in a calculator before, to my knowledge. It's a pitching rate slider.
Okay. So I just scan the QR code.
Yes.
And the first thing that comes up on my phone, it's a handsome looking webpage, by the way. Is that going to show?
You're clearly not on TikTok. You know, you got to like do the whole put your hand behind it when you're showing. You know,
it worked. No, my camera's great. It worked. And so I have, when I click on this QR code, I've got the QC report. Mm-hmm. Oh, that the quality control
live
report.
QC,
I've got the strain info. I could hit that button, mm-hmm. or I can hit the yeast calculator button, which is what I'm doing.
And the strain info also has the White Labs Brewing Company information on it. But the calculator.
So now I go to my calculator and I can put my unit of volume, which would be barrels, liters, or hectoliters.
Right.
Right. So let's say I'm doing 5 hectoliters. I have a really big home brewery. I can put in my pitching temperature.
Yeah.
Right? Fahrenheit or Celsius?
We found most people used to always be 70, 72 Fahrenheit. Right now it's 65.
Interesting.
All the breweries out there, the craft breweries in the United States, man, they've gone to 65, which is cool. It's great. It's also cool temperature. But it has an impact on yeast, right? So our PPG, the Pure Next Generation, is all about more yeast. We haven't even talked about that yet, but it's more yeast. But anyway, it takes that into account with the 65 degrees.
How many liters is like a 5 or 10? What's a 10 barrel, a 10 gallon homebrew batch? How many liters? Because I'm going to switch to liters.
Well, no. Stay on the 5 hectoliters because we haven't done the homebrew one yet.
Oh, okay.
It'll show the same point.
Oh, you can change the units also.
Okay. So hectoliters and
then 500 liters.
I'm taking notes of Justin using
I'm doing 5 hectoliters. I'm going to pitch at 70 degrees. Actually, can I change that?
Sure.
What do you say? 65 is now quite common. Okay. And then my starting gravity, you can choose Play-Doh, bricks, or specific gravity. The default here is 12 Play-Doh.
Everybody's, again, like the most common now commercial breweries, craft breweries in the United States is 15 Play-Doh.
Okay.
15 Play-Doh, 65 degrees. We've done so much work with the breweries over the last 3 years to do this, and also the 27 years, but it's funny that Play-Doh has gone up for most breweries and homebrewers too, really, and the temperature's gone down.
All right. So for this, because I'm doing 5 hectoliters, should I get to choose my packaging on the calculator too. Should I pick Pure Pitch Pro for 5 hectoliters, or should I pick the homebrew? Oh, no, it's not on there anyway.
Yeah,
all right,
it's
I'm
not
doing
there.
Pure Pitch Pro. Yeah. All right. And then we're going to calculate. We'll see how you did here, Mike White. Calculating. I got to hit it twice. Okay. The recommended number of Pure Pitch Pro pouches is 1. 1 pouch, which is going to give me 7.53 million cells per milliliter. Which is a big old pitch, right?
Yeah, it's a good pitch. It's a really good pitch.
Okay. And then there's a button where if I'm not happy with that, if I still don't believe you, if I think that Chris White and his brother have lied to me about 7.5 million cells, I can hit the customize pitch rate button.
Yes.
And do it myself.
We changed that name yesterday.
That's you did?
You used to say advanced. Nobody knew what advanced was. So
customize is perfect. Yeah. I like that.
Okay. I think that was my idea.
It was Kara's idea.
Now I have found the pitching slider.
Yeah, that's...
And if I slide it... So right now, it's at, of course, where you've already recommended I should be. And it's telling me that position on the slider is, quote, ideal. But I don't believe you guys. I like to spend money. And I feel like, you know, I read a science book once.
You use now, Mr. Multi.
And now I'm a professional brewer. So I don't believe White Labs. And I just moved it over a little bit. And now I need 3 pouches to get myself to 22.65 million cells per milliliter. And I can go farther, by the way. That's just in the center of the slider. I think you were right to do that.
Yeah, the slider gives you all this customization. So you're seeing what we've been had out for a year with the pros. The homebrew one will look very similar. One pouch, yes, yeah. Two pouches, three pouches. You can use fractions of it because it has the cap and just cap it again. It's the same viability up to its shelf life. We've done a lot of work on that. Because of the film, we changed the film. We made the film even more breathable. But those ones you were looking at were these pro sizes right here.
Yeah.
So they're lightweight.
What I was looking at on the calculator, which, of course, yeah. Very
so
similar.
Any pros out there, you know, that have used those sizes probably.
Yeah. The Pro also has a spout. Yeah. You know, yeah. Got the twist-off spout.
And the spout actually gives us an aseptic way to add it to the fermenter.
Oh, on the Pro?
On the Pro, we have a little pump called our aseptic transfer system that you can attach it and put it in the bottom of the fermenter. With the homebrew unit, for those homebrewers out there, I know you guys are going to find some DIY ways of just adding something that screws onto that, and you go right into your fermenter, and you just squeeze it in. There's no air contact at all. So a cap also gives you an aseptic way of adding the yeast.
Nice. Nice.
Just less air contact.
Yeah, again, just to try to get the actual pure pitch that you guys are looking for.
So I just wanted to go back to the calculator a minute. Because I know what's going to happen is people are going to ask, am I supposed to make a starter?
You know that's the question that's going to come up.
Yes. And that is one of the things with Mr. Multi, right? So Mr. Multi is going to tell you, you should buy 15, pure pitches, or you should make a starter of X amount, right? And we know, we haven't sent Jamil a lot of data to be able to update that in a while. But I sort of now have a new controversial opinion on the starters, because I've found that I cannot do anything to convince people to not make a starter anymore.
Okay.
I can show them all the data in the world.
Yeah.
People that make starters like to make starters. So I just say, make a starter if you want to make one.
Right.
So Chris didn't get to this yet, but this size is double the amount that is previously in the original pure pitch. So this is a 70 mil. This is 70 mils, and which is great. So I would likely say you don't need to make a starter, but someone still is going to make a starter, and they love it. And so if you want to make a starter, make a starter.
So let me put a fine point on that visually too, because I'm a visual person. And the Mr. Malty calculator, I don't know when it was, Jamil's calculator, I don't know when it was updated, but it used to be based on the vial that I'm holding in front of the camera right now on YouTube, for those of you. And he used to say, yeah, you need more than that if you're not going to do a starter. Then the first generation of Pure Pitch, which is now sitting next to the vial on the camera, these two together make up one of the next generation Pure Pitch. Do I have that right? These two together now actually constitute the volume of next generation Pure Pitch.
Yep.
Yeah? About right
there?
That's
it. Okay. That's great. We should use that.
I still think Kara's a million times right that every homebrewer that we meet at the homebrewers conference is still going to do a starter. But for those of you who aren't set in your ways and are still experimenting or just want to trust the folks at White Labs, there is a calculator on the back. try one. And so, or try what the calculator tells you. Try what the calculator tells you.
Jamil always likes a lot of yeast.
If you pull that microphone towards you right there, Mike White. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, one of the intriguing things about this, just like Pure Pitch Next Generation, is it's actually a lower price. Because while it's double the pitch, it's not double the price.
Nice. Okay.
And, great. So I think
efficiencies have...
Our customers will enjoy that. Plus, just to let you guys know, you won't see the calculator for Pure Pitch Next Generation Homebrew until we release it to the public.
Okay, that's fair. And you're not going to get the QR code to find it anyway until they release to the public. So
everything looks good
on my phone.
I'll live. You did it. Yeah. Because we've been using that on the pros. And these are, we're going to leave some samples with you if anybody wants to use these. These are real. This is California Ale Yeast WP001 that we're making every single day in these Pure Pitch Next Generation pouches for our own internal work and with homebrewers we know. We've worked with some clubs. Well, if any club wants some, let us know.
Joe's, I know you guys are out there. When you listen to the show, I'll put these back in my walk-in fridge tonight here at the Hop Grenade. If you want some homebrew, why don't you come get it? And I think I might walk down one of these pro pitches to our new brewery here in Concord, Sidegate Brewing Company.
Oh, great.
We had them on the show not too long ago. I really like those guys. And why not give them a little pitch to try out, right? You're leaving that with me, too.
I'm
going to
leave them with you.
That
that's Charlie Papazian's strain, his Fist Bump 1983, WP 1983 strain that we grow for him. And we've got that's enough to make 5 hectoliters or 5 barrels. I'll just say 5 barrels. We're here in the United States. Yep. 5 barrels of ale or 5 barrels of lager or 10 barrels of ale.
Heck yeah.
Because we got some temperature things on there. Again, more stuff you can see on the calculator. I really like the calculator because it ties in a lot of the other calculators. We're talking about Mr. Malty because we all love Jamil and we know him here. But also, there's other ones. But what you can do with our calculator is say, you can use the slider and say, here's, maybe you want 1 million cells per mil per degree Plato or 0.7 million cells per degree Plato or 1.5. Then you can see what that corresponds to our packages, and then you can see what it corresponds to the calculator. So you can kind of use these calculators together. No matter what volume a homebrew pouch comes in, those calculators are going to tell you to make a starter.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if it's 200 mils or any of the vendors out there, it's going to say to make a starter because these calculators are built on a pretty high pitching rate, right? Which is fine. But we're just trying to say this one will give you 7.5 million cells per mil in an ale. Well, in anything, right? But that works great in ale. Sierra Nevada's revolution, you know, use that pitching rate for a lot of their history, and that's not a secret. And their beers are fantastic.
Yeah.
15 million cells per mil, double that has been the lager rate for most of history, like Pilsner Urquell and other things. Not a secret. And so really standardizing, here's this recommendation, but you can use whatever you want with a calculator that shows you how much you can use.
Okay.
And that calculator took almost 3 years to build too. I don't know. It sounds kind of like, why can't you just build it fast? But there's so many little details in there. I hope the home brewing community and the commercial brewers already are finding, but sometimes they don't find our calculator.
Yeah.
Or they think we've said, oh, this is what you have to use. We're not saying you have to use anything.
Yeah.
We're saying this is a tool that shows you can use whatever you want. Here's a pouch with with a cap and a port that you can use as much as or as little as you want.
Yeah. I love it. Okay, before break, we have a couple beers in our glass.
Yeah, we've got 2 IPAs. They are Smath IPAs. Have you ever heard of a Smath IPA?
No, I thought they were Smash.
Yes, because someone messed up and now it's a Smath IPA. It's single malt.
Yeah,
triple hop instead of single hop.
Nice.
They didn't mess up the word. They messed up the recipe a little different, so that's why they call it Smash.
I mean, it probably tastes better anyways. Does anyone really like Smash beers?
No. I've only tasted the first one, by the way, the clear-looking West Coast version.
So that's the California ale yeast everyone knows and loves. And then the other one is the Charlie's Fist Bump, which you can tell. So this is Charlie's Fist Bump is
same wort again.
Yeah, same wort. Yeah, I mean you can see how
one's hazy and one's not. Interesting.
So his strain is a little bit less flocculent, and then also designed to be in an ale or a lager. So we use it in you know both recipes, but you can tell it needs some fining agents.
Yeah, that's so interesting. This is what I love about this concept that you guys do with the splitting the yeast between the same wort.
Yeah.
So the first one, the Cal Ale, I know it's an IPA, but, and this is a compliment, it's like a Sierra Nevada, it's like a fresh Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. It's got like that firm, I don't know what hops are in there, but to me they taste like the Cascade, like they taste like Sierra Nevada hops. It's got some classic sea hops. It's bittered on the lower side of what would be a brand new IPA, which makes it to me taste like a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, which used to be on the higher side.
The IBUs on that are 61.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Yeah,
It's a good. I mean, it's a good IPA. It's bigger than a Sierra Pale Ale. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, it's
but
6.5,
it's just.
Yeah.
But it's reminiscent of it. It's clean like it. It's the Chico yeast or the Cal Ale yeast. I know, but that's its other colloquial name, right? And to me, it's like following in that pedigree right there. That's like a nailed it to me use of Cal Ale yeast.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think so. Tell me, it's sea hops. Am I completely wrong on that? I'm completely wrong.
Well, I don't even know. What the heck is Euconaut?
Oh, Euconaut, right?
Euconaut.
Yeah, I think it's Euconaut. Yeah,
Euconaut?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Simcoe Cryo is in the dry hop.
Fuck it, I'm completely off.
No, I totally, I mean, I get it, right? I totally get that.
Too bad. Oh, yeah. Wow. It's wonderful. It's a good IPA. And then, yeah,
there's Warrior in it also.
Mm. Well, that's old school at least, but it's not a sea hop. Yeah, and then the fist bump that Charlie Papazian's yeast is completely different.
Yeah,
it's got a mellow bitterness like a hazy does and should.
Yeah,
right, like a less rigid bitterness to that. Yeah, that's a tasty beer too. They're both good IPAs. What are they? 7%?
6.5.
Yeah. Okay. I could taste the 0.5% difference. Yeah, these are great. These are good beers. Who's brewing your beer right now?
Craig Tump.
Mm-hmm.
He's been brewing, a little bit over a year, and previously of Modern Times and Stone. So, yeah.
Craig's doing all right.
Yeah, no, he's making good beer, yeah.
I like Craig.
Craig's doing great. He's got a good team, great team in San Diego that brews the beer, with him and... under that direction. And so our guys making wort, our brewers spend so much time making yeast wort, they just love to make a beer.
Yeah,
like,
well, right.
Could
yeah,
I make a new wort?
Yeah, like with something fun. Yeah.
It's all grain. It's all the process, and
are they pumping through wort through that system 24/7? Is that how
every
much
day,
wort you guys
yeah,
need?
Yeah, every day we have at least one or two runs. Yeah.
One, okay, so it's not a 24-hour process yet, but it's a couple batches a day.
No, it used to be. I have made changes to that.
Oh, I see. Okay.
We've gotten more efficient. Yes.
We have Asheville doing the same thing. Yeah. Right? So Asheville helps the production, and then Copenhagen does a lot of Europe.
Okay.
Yeah. So we've been able to give some lives back to the people in San Diego.
Very nice. Yeah. But, cut labor, like efficiencies are important too, but yeah.
And efficiencies,
Do you know what it's like to be a manager and you have to, people are working 24 hours a day? It's the worst.
Oh gosh.
We did that
you
for years.
You can't turn your phone on silent.
No, you just wake up and you're anticipating something to be broken. So, yeah.
That is rough.
No.
Craig said something kind of interesting. I think the world of people working out here in your audience find interesting. I think he said reducing the schedule has actually been able to help him keep brewers.
Oh.
Because that's something he can say, like, you can have a weekend or you can have a night, something we can offer. And when you think about how hard it is to retain people right now.
Seriously, that's like a
really
bonus.
Tough thing post-pandemic. It's a sort of an unforeseen bonus that we can do that I thought was interesting perspective from Craig,
and
the different managers have that now in their back pocket to say, well,
you have a day off.
Yeah, you can have a day off.
Years ago, I went to Creature Comforts in Georgia, and they had talked about how they were not a 24-hour, facility, and they thought night shift was, just terrible for humans in general. And they really tried hard to not do that. I don't know if they do that anymore, but I remember hearing that and I thought that's so interesting. And we've now been able to succeed at that. So
good for you. I love it. Yeah. This is why you're head of operations, Kara Taylor. Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, a little bit more from White Labs and Pure Pitch Technology. Hang in there. It's the session. Welcome back to the program. Thank you for hanging out with us tonight. We are still chilling with the White Labs crew. At least most of them. Chris is still on his way back in from the break. But that's all right. We are here hanging out, having a good time. We've got Mike White in the studio, and we are learning about all the new White Labs technology. We did get through their beers tonight, which are wonderful. I really like what you guys are doing on the beer side. And you're keeping things moving on the innovation front. Now, a couple things that Chris mentioned is the different places that you make yeast now. So like you spend a bunch of your time in North Carolina right now too, right? So
yeah,
San Diego's still White Labs home base, right?
Yes.
But you are being head of operations, are kind of running around making sure everybody's doing what needs to be done, right? So it seems to me like you're about half time out in North Carolina right now.
Yeah, so about 6 years ago, we built a facility there, and it's about equivalent in terms of size as San Diego,
okay,
but more efficient in terms of two stories versus three buildings. And So, yeah, and then also we have the restaurant that we, which, you know, honestly, I have to give it to Chris because I have poo-pooed the restaurant idea probably from day one because it just sounded like a nightmare, and he has really pushed through on it. But ultimately, you know, we're essentially fermenting our dough with our yeast, so it's all our yeast. So right
brewer's
now we're
yeast dough.
Yeah, so okay. Right now we're using the kitchen's using Kveik yeast for it.
Oh yeah,
the Opshog strain, and it's about, he could probably chime in, but it's about a 72-hour rise or, you know, fermentation on that dough, which is really unusual for pizza dough. And
did you guys start with the Kveik yeast? I felt like you started with something else.
No, we had a different strain.
Yeah, we started with English ale yeast.
Okay.
And now we've added the kitchen to San Diego, too. So both facilities have the kitchen with the tap room.
Yeah.
Asheville's kitchen and restaurant is just bigger. You know, because you've seen our tap room in San Diego.
Yeah, I don't know where the hell you put a kitchen, but I'll have to come down and see that.
It was my office.
Somebody's old office. Right,
okay. It was my office.
All right. Oh, so that's why they shipped you to North Carolina. Yeah.
But now you look at the kitchen and you never know it was an office, right? It looks like it's always been a kitchen.
Right.
So that's how these things work. But yeah, we're using our yeast, and anybody making pizzas out there or the things with dough, brewer's yeast. We didn't invent the idea of using brewer's yeast. I mean, brewer's yeast was what everybody used in Europe 100+ years ago because there were breweries everywhere, right?
Yeah.
And so go get some yeast.
Okay.
And so the rises were longer. But guess what? You know, when you do longer yeast contact with flour, you develop flavor. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, to brewers, that should make sense. I mean, it does, right? That's why it made sense to me. Let's try this. Because we could make a beer in a day or we could make a beer in 10 days. And the 10-day, you know, the contact time with the yeast is going to develop more flavors.
Sure. Okay.
And so what happened with baking was it's almost disappeared from the vocabulary of bakers about flavor, unless you go to a specialty pizza show or something, which in Vegas every year it happens and they talk about it. But out there in the general area, it's more rare. It's not absent. I'm not saying that. It's just more rare.
And it's
people
a lot
talk
about
performance with the yeast.
Texture and yeah.
Rise, right?
Yeah.
Performance. It's all about performance. But if you want this yeast to perform in an hour or two, you ain't get much flavor from it.
Okay.
So you're getting gas bubbles, which is cool. And so what you might notice is a lot of pizza doughs are a platform for ingredients, but there's very little flavor in the dough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Two exceptions, you know, wood-fired pizzas. Have a flavor from the fire, not so much the dough.
Yeah.
And sourdough. Sourdough is the only kind of baking product people think about in terms of multi-day fermentations and flavor.
Okay.
That's actually brewer's specialty. We know how to repitch. That's all sourdough is, right? We know how to use yeast. And so we're just trying to do that in our little kitchens to kind of show this. That it can be done, and there's a flavor impact. Mm. So in North Carolina, we use a wood-fired oven because there's wood. California, we don't have wood, and maybe we can't even burn wood, so we don't have a wood oven.
Yeah.
But the recipes are the same, and people say, oh, you can't use the same recipes in the different ovens. Yeah, you can. You can.
Nice.
Little tweaks, but you're basically the same. And you see how they come out, and you know, I always prefer the wood oven, but... I have a little one at home, but I don't know. The whole story was you can use brewer's yeast because brewer's yeast is the best yeast.
Okay.
All the other yeast out there are faster, they're easier, they're simpler DNA. But anything you could ever think of using yeast for, folks, you can use brewer's yeast.
So when I've heard
it was maximized to make flavor, not to be about a fast performer.
Because over the years, I've heard, oh yeah, no, you don't, you don't use bread yeast for beer, and you don't use brewer's yeast for bread. And they've said it. I've heard people say it doesn't work. It's because they didn't give it enough time. It's because they expected it to rise within a couple hours. Is that what kind of you're saying? Like, it just takes time.
Right. So the words in Vegas at the pizza show was multi-day fermentation. Right. So it's not something new. It ties in again with sourdough stuff. But people are realizing, and again, or re-realizing, of course, that you give some dough a longer contact time with yeast, and flavors come out. So what we noticed with a 72-hour fermentation is more gas bubbles, more CO2, so a bigger dough, a bigger crust, which fires nice under wood for anybody doing that at home or with their own pizza kitchens. Use your own, use your brewer's yeast, folks. And flavor. A little bit of sourness because, of course, it has. There's nothing like as sanitary in baking because you're just, as brewing, you're not boiling the flour, right? So you're getting some bacteria to grow along with it, which adds some sourness to the dough, which is fantastic. I mean, Justin, you have a place next to you here at Hop Grenade. We had a bagel this morning, and you got a sourdough bagel. So I said, oh, I'll get that. And it was the most sourdoughy bagel I've had in years.
Yeah, they do a nice job.
And that is just so, like, I'd love to find that detail because often you just order the sourdough thing and it's like, eh, a tinge of something, right?
Yeah.
But this one was a great sourdough bagel right next to you here.
Oh, yeah. What did, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, I've been sourcing a lot of books on this, and really you're going back to 1920s England to find resources on reusing brewer's yeast for bread and all kinds of other items that you're baking. And there's a if that wasn't the tradition back then, I'd be surprised. And I would hope to see this continue across pizzerias around the U.S. because it has a huge impact on flavor. And we've had so many questions about it. We've now put the recipes down, and they're available at our tasting rooms on how to do it at home.
Oh, nice. Whitelabs.com. Check it
There's
out.
There's a QR code on the pizza crust.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah. That's amazing. It's, you just print it right on. Yeah, it's burned into it.
It's from, a laser it's etch.
Yeah, yeah. What did Sandor Katz have to say about brewer's yeast in fermentation? Did he talk about that at all? Did he specify yeast?
No, he didn't. You know, actually, the most interesting thing was talking, this guy from Nespresso was there. And he was talking about how they're isolating yeast from their coffee cherry ferments. So, you know, like the coffee, it's a cherry around it, and the coffee's bean is fermented and then processed. But they're isolating the yeast because they have realized that controlling the yeast within that coffee ferment changes the flavor immensely, and they want to control the flavor.
Right.
And so it was just so interesting. So they're basically trying to figure out from sensory panels, even beyond the roasting, which, you know, you think roasting would just kill, you know, all your chance of the fermentation doing anything. And now they have one product on the market right now that is like, it's called a dry fermentation.
Okay.
Which I still didn't quite get entirely what was going on with that, but it was super interesting. So yeast.
Yeah. It's so fascinating to me. And I've talked about this before on the show, although probably years ago now, that something that seems as old as time, or at least as old as humans' time on Earth, like fermentation is one of the oldest things that we have. Right? Like, you know, going back to, we didn't know how it worked or whatever. And we still don't in so many ways. And I was, when I got into this business, I was so fascinated at the amount of data that people were like, oh yeah, no, we just write this stuff all down now. And all I thought was like, why are we just writing it down now? Why has it taken even this long for us to focus on fermentation even more? So when you bring up coffee and they're like, oh no, they're just learning that if they do it this way, I'm just always so surprised. Because, and we've said this about beer, fermentation in beer is as simple or as completely complex as you want it to be, right? So I'm always fascinated by how, when we talk about what we're learning about fermentation. And by fascinated, well, I mean, like, how slow are we? Like, we're just learning about fermentation.
People don't care about history much, mm-hmm. right? We all think we like history, and there's history. But look at politics, look at the world. We don't really follow our history. And I would just say fermentation has been lost in history. We aren't discovering new things. We are in ways of new ingredients being used. Okay. But beer is one of those fermented products that didn't die. 'Cause brewers, way before us, learned to make it taste good. Mm-hmm. They trained that yeast. They domesticated that yeast to help make the flavor be good, right?
Yeah.
Because they were reusing the yeast. That gave them the opportunity to domesticate it. Fermented meat, fermented fish, kind of is awful. You know, unless you grow up in that culture, and there's different cultures that have these things. Mm-hmm. But there was no opportunity to domesticate that yeast into making things taste better.
Yeah.
So, but you know, beer, back was. In the day, you had fermentation, you had salt, you had fire. Yeah, but fire needed fresh things, right? So these things are old because Homo sapiens are old, in terms of history, but only, you know, only certain things survived. Right. And I think beer is an example of something that survived because it got really, really handled well in Europe.
Sure.
By peoples and countries, current countries like Germany and Austria and England and Belgium and things like that, where they spent time really trying to figure this out and domesticate the yeast. And here we are today with something that's still barley, hops, water and yeast. So simple, but even so hard to make.
And well, right, because even its domestic survival was not, I think, extensively documented. It was extensively passed down. Just
completely.
Do this. Completely. This is what you do. Just trust me. This is what you do.
Yeah.
and then generation after generation just did that, and it did work, and it continued. But it wasn't until sort of modern beer that we started going, but why does it work? We get it. You figured out that this is what works, but why does it work? Well, and you do
and,
that.
And where and, would you write it down? Like originally, writing, I think, was about taxes and like keeping track of people's stuff.
Sure.
It wasn't about making something, right? So that was passed down.
And it wasn't a serious science.
Yeah.
It was serious business.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to. I think that beer has always been like serious business throughout human history. But it wasn't serious science. It was just, I'm telling you how to do it. If you do it this way, it's going to keep being good.
We see this a lot in distilling. Distilling is a great example of... I think a lot of those big producers even don't entirely know why they're doing something, but they know that's been passed down and this is the exactly what it tastes like and this is what the consumer wants, so we do it this way.
Right.
Yeah. And
but now we pick things apart a little more. And by the way, all those methods, in fact, just what you just described, they worked to preserve this type of fermentation and to keep it alive and going. But now, in recent years, because of all the whys and the hows, and we want to tweak it this way, we want to tweak it that way, we have more serious scientists, like yourselves, like taking an interest of like, well, just, but okay, but why? And then now, so anyway, I'm still I'm fascinated by it because fermentation, again, is so simple. And so freaking complex at the exact same time.
Yes, and now you have restaurants also looking at taking their leftover materials, whether it be pasta or rice or something else, and fermenting it and then using that as a sauce. And finding, you know what the funny story about these restaurant stories about fermentation to me is? They say the food costs have gone down.
Mm.
I would never think about food costs, right? Because everything I've done has made everything more expensive. Like, so I'm the worst CEO in that terms because I make things cost more, like to make because I want it to be better,
right? Yeah.
But what people have realized in some of these restaurants is, gosh, their food costs can go down if they ferment their waste materials, waste meaning just stuff that can't go into a dish, but it's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And then using it back in dishes.
Right.
And I think this will keep expanding in popularity because the best restaurants in the world that keep winning these categories are doing these fermentations.
Interesting.
So it's all not only costing less for these restaurants, they're also winning these accolades for flavor.
Right. Yeah.
And creativity.
Yeah. Increasing their productivity.
Yeah.
Creativity.
So anybody in their home kitchens or their own little restaurants might start experimenting with this.
Yeah. All right. I'm waiting for you to write the giant fermentation book that I have from Sandor Katz, Mr. White. I want yours next.
Oh.
I think I bought it for you. I feel I loved it so much that I bought it for you.
I love the book, and I'd love to write more, but Karen, Mike, know, like, I love White Labs. I love everyday meetings, working on things, details, and I enjoy it.
I
love the people at White Labs, so that, if anything has kept me from more writing, it's the company. I just love the company, the people in the company, the things we do, and I don't know, I where I spend all my time.
Why isn't Mike White your ghostwriter yet? I feel like he's your ghostwriter.
Maybe the future. But Jamil, who helped Chris and wrote the book with him, his first book, was so amazing.
He is good.
I could not surpass.
Amazing
skill level. By the way, he was great on your last show. I mean, I really...
He, you know, I invited him. I had connected with him over a beer, and I hadn't seen him in a while through COVID because he's been immunocompromised. And I just had such a nice time just hanging out with him. I was like, Jamil, you got to come back on the show. So I was really happy. I'm glad you said that. I had a really good time with him and the whole crew. And now, because of his crew that he brought in from True Symmetry, we're now bringing hard seltzer into the Hop Grenade on tap.
Oh, wow.
We're going to be doing flavored hard seltzer to try another segment, you know, see if we can stop saying no to people.
Just dudes inside?
It might. Well, we call them bros.
Bros, but, yes.
Oh, maybe it won't be just dudes. Yeah, yes. Maybe. Maybe. We'll see. We're going to try. We're trying new things. All right. Well, listen, we always have more to talk about every time we get to the end of a White Lab show. So luckily, we're friends and you guys will be back on soon. Kara and I are working on our own podcast. We haven't decided.
Yeah,
the
we
topic
have a lot
yet.
Of topics.
Yeah, it won't be beer, but we've been
I already came up with another one. History. You already got it. You have a history podcast starting soon.
Yeah.
May I, just to be lighthearted, suggest that you create a podcast about how to be... strong opinions at meetings and see if that contributes to longevity. There could be many meetings on this.
Is this a leadership podcast?
It's a leadership podcast.
Kara is strong-minded and she's brilliant, of course, and all of that.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure she loves meetings.
Not everybody loves meetings.
Yeah,
I forgot to mention earlier
that I did. I quit the calculator group because I was so frustrated. So when Chris said it's taken years, it really has, and I quit at some point. So
well, I like a team approach, and team approaches take time, and patience. I got a bucket load of patience, right?
You do, yeah.
And so I want things to come out right, East, the calculator, the different things. So I like a team, and some people don't like teams. Some people want to do it themselves.
We have a meeting right now.
I'm a team player. I was a football player. Mike and I loved playing football and up to through high school, and we weren't good enough for college. But anyway, I like team sports, and that's how I try to run the company.
See, I always land right in the middle of these kinds of discussions. In fact, almost every discussion. And I'll tell you why. It's because I'm kind of brilliant. But second of all, I see both sides of these things. And I'm going to tell you this right now. This is going to be my statement for you all to take home with you, both listeners and the people in this room. Meetings for the sake of meetings are fucking bullshit. And I've never liked them. And I do think that people rely a little too heavily on meetings to just talk their ideas through. spend your time developing your ideas before you come to the meeting, is what I think on one side. Meetings for the sake of meetings, I'm just going to go out, I'm just going to say it, are bullshit. Be prepared for your meeting. Spend time developing your thoughts and then go through that process. Once you've gone through the process yourself, go ahead and have a meeting. Although even then, I'm kind of against them. On the other side, of course, I understand the team player thing. And I'm good in meetings, even though I hate them, because I understand all the sides. And you, there's always a certain amount of politics involved in a team, in a group meeting. You have to understand where people are coming from and be able to get your message across in such a way. See, I thought about doing a podcast about leadership and communication.
Oh, I love this. I'm already signed up.
I do have a degree in it, but it's been so long that I feel like my credential list sucks. It's like, oh, you have a degree in it, yeah. But what have you done for 15 years? Fucking bullshitted about beer. So I feel like my... Anyhow, don't have meetings for the sake of meetings. Come prepared to your meeting, but then you do got to listen to everybody. Now, if half the people in that meeting didn't follow step one, I'm with Kara. My gosh, not that this was your argument. No, I'm just, this is my perspective. I didn't say that this is your argument. I don't need to sit through you coming up with your ideas in this meeting. Some of this, you needed to do that before. So my patient,
I would just say, Justin, you know, I think you are the 75th percentile saying like meetings are that. I would say the problem is what you just asked for doesn't happen. So the That's United States is known from people working with different countries. People in other countries go, why do the Americans always want a lot of meetings? You know why? Because not a lot is done between meetings.
Well, that's a problem.
I know. It's so it is actually what you say, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're at a meeting and you say, okay, what did you guys do on this since the last meeting? And it's nothing. That's why you're having the meeting. That's why Americans have more meetings, because that's when the work is done. So in some other countries, in the UK and Denmark, you know, where we have our lab, we have a little less meetings because they are doing things between the meetings and then communicating with each other.
Yeah.
In the United States, we're doing a little less between the meetings and we're not communicating with each other. So if we want to, you know, now I'm philosophizing a little bit here, but I think it would be great to have less meetings if we could accomplish what you say. Do
the work.
Do more between the meetings.
Yeah.
But also communicate with the people.
Yeah.
We are not great at communicating.
I agree
with
that. You're right. Yeah.
Even with the person working right next to us.
Yep.
So I think that's funny that you just said that, because the last time I had a meeting with a Denmark team, not specifically ours, part of it, but also a company in Denmark, everyone around the table had to say how they were doing.
Oh, ew.
And I wanted to die. I was like, this is taking way too long.
I'm sorry I'm cold-hearted, but I could give a shit how you're doing.
Exactly.
When I'm at work.
It felt very American. I was like, let's just get through this. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But it is kind of funny that you said that, because we're terrible at communicating. Yeah. And that sort of summed that up for me.
Yeah.
They really cared how my weekend went.
I do. And just as we go on a tangent here, and I'll wrap it up. I am fascinated by company cultures all the time. And 100%. Chris and I have spent a lot of hours over the years talking about company culture. So actually, all four of us have. I am always fascinated by it. And I'm certainly fascinated by communication. But then I have developed a meeting suck rule over the years based on that too. But you're not wrong, Chris. You're not wrong. We all communicate a little differently, and
I would just say, you know,
Zoom is the rise of eternal meetings.
Yeah,
that's what I hate about Zoom.
If there was another way to do it, Justin, I would support your position. Just as if there's another way to do email, I support your position. Yeah, I am so anti-email. I don't give a crap about media. I love meetings. I'll do meetings all day long, but I hate email.
Interesting.
So I'm more on the email side, that I think it's bogging down our companies.
Yeah.
Like
I hate email, too.
If people are upset that you're not responding to email, okay, but are you not responding to something a staff person needs, a customer needs, an innovation need?
Sure, yeah.
Right? Like anybody could sit in their office all day long and answer emails, but that seems kind of lame.
Agreed.
Well, emails become the text message now, right? So yeah. It's no longer an info. It's become a text message. I have a whole course on this. It's called Master Your Inbox that I haven't released yet.
Oh, see, I'm all about that too. So I have mastered my inbox, and these are all efficiency. So I'm with you on this too. Yeah. I don't want meetings or email.
Yeah,
I'd rather have meetings or things to get email. Done. Quickly, without me listening to you filibuster.
If that's meetings, that's okay.
Yeah.
Email is very destructive, not because of the person who wrote it, but because the person who gets it, there's a very small chance that they'll understand what you talk about, particularly if the email comes from me.
Yes, that's very true.
Maybe my new podcast is Counseling White Labs.
But it's so easy to misinterpret and to not just... Person is making a point. Okay, I'll respond to that point. They interpret everything into an email that's not their tone, whatever, and so forth. It doesn't have any tone, by the way.
Mike White has a course on that. Also, email has no tone.
Yeah,
I love that. Labs,
yeah. And so it's really about how you receive it, not how the person writes it. But take all that aside.
Yeah,
you're hitting yourself against a wall trying to change that culture.
Yeah,
and so that's why meetings do help, because. Particularly when you're trying to do a programming project or a project, you could exchange emails all day and you could have a 5-minute conversation and figure it out.
For sure.
So my meetings are working groups. There are people doing stuff. Every meeting has 10 things. I'm doing 20 things on this calculator.
It's not status updates.
In the last 2 weeks. It's not status updates. You don't go around the table. Hey,
no, status updates are the worst.
You're this project.
Send that in an email.
We're there for one project.
Yeah.
I hope that's... but who knows?
Yeah. Right. Somewhere in this room, we have the perfect communication style for a business. Somewhere in the four of us, we are so close to the perfect... the combo of all of us. Somewhere there. All right.
But, you know, when we do company surveys...
Yeah.
...in our staff, you know... we have less than 200 people. We're not a big company, but it's more than 50, right? So it's like, or 100 or whatever. So it's still, you know, between 100, 200 any time. And I get the same response we got when we had 10 people or 20 people or 40, 50 people. We need to communicate better. And I think every company has that. We hired people from big companies that you think it have all figured out, and they go, "Oh, guys, you guys communicate so much better than this other company."
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, oh, so it's something people care about.
Yeah,
and it's an elusive challenge.
No, I give you that. Yeah. I give you that. But still, less meetings.
I have so many theories on this. We have another podcast coming on that.
All right. Well, it's wonderful to have you guys here on the show to talk about yeast. I'm actually stoked that we ended with a completely different topic just for fun. I like that sort of thing. Gives me a little excitement that when we kind of go off board there. Go to whitelabs.com. You can learn all the things that we talked about today. There is a constant education component going on over there. If you haven't checked out their social media recently, their YouTube page is pretty damn solid. They're stepping it up. They have been for a few years now. There's some really good content over there. And then, of course, the brand new Pure Pitch Next Generation Homebrew is coming out soon. It's not even on the shelves yet, but you're going to see it very soon. You could see it right here on my YouTube page where we showed you some of the packaging. And anyway, I think it's exciting stuff that you have going on. As always, after all these years, I still always like talking to you folks. So thanks for coming into the show.
We like you too.
It was fun. Good game today too, except for the Padres winning, Whitey.
Well, San Diego has a pretty good team this year.
Yeah, you guys are going to go to the playoffs.
I'm from this area, of course, so I have a lot of love for the Giants, but lived in San Diego now for over 30 years.
Makes sense.
So it was a fun game to go to you with, and...
we had a good time.
It was a very tough...
it's a tough loss.
Tough loss. Tough win.
I think you might have officially knocked us out of the wild card race with the sweep this week, so what are you going to do? What are you going to do? But you still have a chance. Oakland.
We're going to Mexico City.
You can forget. But now we're going to go to Mexico City.
Love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You all have options in this room, one of which is to convert to A's in 2023,
and
we might have a chance.
It's,
will they have a stadium?
Exactly. And by the way, every year is when the A's might have a chance. Yeah. All right. Thank you for hanging out with us, everybody. We appreciate you. Thanks to all of our sponsors, including More Beer, Beersmith, Home Brewing Software, still the best software out there. You want to go to Williams Brewing, williamsbrewing.com. Check them out. Also been with us for so long. Blickman Engineering. Wonderful, wonderful folks over there. John Blickman's a good guy. Check out our sponsors. Support the show. Thanks for listening. This has been The Session with White Labs. Go to whitelabs.com. Check them out. And we'll see you next time right here on the Brewing Network.
The Session is a production of the Brewing Network and brought to you by More Beer. Check them out at morebeer.com. Find more content and live video of this show on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/brewingnetwork. For sponsorship opportunities and information, please reach out to advertising@thebrewingnetwork.com. To reach our hosts, contact feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com.